If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, son. I'm Luke.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Captain.
Good morning. And welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast this early in the morning. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. I do think about that sometimes because we tend to record like toward the end of work days.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, just based on the download stats, I think most people listen in the morning.
Yeah.
That's the sense I get.
We should really meet the FODs on their level a little more often.
We're always like drinking, really like letting shit fly, and it's probably not the mood anybody's in.
I think this is Star Trek comedy podcasting on hard mode. Can you be funny at 9 a.m? My wife said the sweetest thing to me on my way to the studio. Something she almost never does is encourage me in this endeavor. I made some flip comment about like, I'm going to go try to be funny at 9 a.m. And she's like, you're going to do great. You're going to be very funny. And I just melted. I was like, really needed to hear that.
She knows that if she's like pretty judicious with comments like that, they'll really have meaning when she gives them out.
Oh yeah. And the three times that's happened have been especially meaningful over the course of the years. Peek behind the pod, 9 a.m. might be the earliest show we've ever recorded.
It might, yeah.
I don't think we've ever done 8 a.m.
No. I mean, I don't usually fly before 10 a.m., and I would say recording a podcast feels as momentous as getting on an airplane.
Because you want to be funny in both instances, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want the bits to be hidden when I'm going through TSA and whatnot.
That's one of your best longstanding rules of any kind. Like, we've talked about the Greatest Gen rules, but the Benjamin R. Harrison rule about no flights before 10.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
No brown eyes.
Yeah.
I developed that because when I was working at Engadget, I flew tons. Like, I think I was probably on the road.
You flew Tonsa?
Yeah.
That's a pretty bad 9 a.m. joke right there.
Hey, we're going to let it slide. We're going to let a lot slide today. No, but I was like, we would be on the road 2 weeks out of the month, you know, and often, you know, I'd be like inbound for JFK and we'd find out we needed to do something. And I'd be like frantically loading the in-flight Wi-Fi in the last 10 minutes it's going to be available so that I can book a flight back out to like San Diego the next morning.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it was really crazy how often that happened. And it started to just make me, you know, I was starting to lose my mind. And so I was like, okay, like I have to institute a couple of policies about making sleep be allowed within the constraints of this work. Cause it was such a fun job. I got to do so many cool things. I literally touched the Large Hadron Collider with the tip of my finger and I got to see, you know, like space technology being built. I got to go into labs where they're building drones that, you know, fly semi-autonomously. It was a really fun job, but it was also destroying my life.
What a career we used to have.
I know. I get to be a fly on the wall in some really cool places. And now...
That was the best part.
Yeah. The, like, special access thing was really cool. And I think that it's been kind of humbling. Like, I guess we do get that a little bit with, like, Greatest Trek. We get screeners early. So, you know, I've seen a lot more of Star Trek Strange New Worlds than most people. And that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when we go to, like, the Star Trek convention... They actively don't really want us to be there. I get the sense, you know, like we don't get to go backstage. We don't get to, you know, do anything. Everything fun that we do at the Star Trek convention, like the Pranica Cabanica, we pay for that, you know.
Star Trek Las Vegas this week when this episode drops.
Awesome. What fun timing.
And I mean, I sent the email to the convention going like, hey, big time Star Trek podcasters would like media credentials.
they never do it.
Expecting this year, like every other year, to be denied.
We watched I shared a TikTok video with you that's like a local Vegas resident who kind of goes around and like reviews all the like famous Vegas hotels. And she was saying that the Rio is currently the worst hotel in Vegas. And
yeah. And their rates are like $8 during the week, and they are hundreds of dollars during the convention. As if Star Trek fans need any more proof that creation doesn't care about you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is the least amount of money they could spend on a convention. And the least comfortable place to do it for anyone.
Yeah. I mean, my room, I didn't even go last year, but 2 years ago, my room was pretty rugged. I checked in originally. I had to move rooms because the first one they put me in had maybe blood stains in it.
There may be blood is...
I think that's the actual tagline of the Rio.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing that I thought was the most remarkable about that video, that TikTok I mentioned, is that she just tosses off a casual... mention of a well-established feral cat colony that apparently inhabits the grounds of the Rio.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me at all.
It doesn't surprise me either.
I encountered feral people at the Rio last time I was there. Some real wild child vibes.
Well, anyways, come party with us there either way.
A very scary version of a Truffaut film is what happens at the Rio.
Keep your eyes on the at Greatest Trek social media accounts for information about the Pranica Cabanica if you're going to be in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to seeing you there and eating all the fries and drinking all the pina coladas together.
Oh, man.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be so good.
Yeah.
If the Purple Zebra... hoof drink station is not open, I'm going to be really disappointed, but I'm kind of expecting it not to be open.
It is, at last check, only open two nights of the week for just a couple hours each. That's the crush depth of any slushy stand, really. Like, that's as low as it gets. Like, how can you, in August, in Las Vegas, see fit to only open a frozen beverage stand for like 8 total hours?
That thing is like the only draw of the Rio at this point.
It's incredible. Yeah. Hey, check in with us on an upcoming episode where we'll give you our summary of how Star Trek Las Vegas went in 2023.
We'll see if we can weather that storm, much like Starship Voyager weathers a storm in today's episode of Voyager.
Yeah, kind of a wild concept in this one. It's Star Trek Voyager Season 6, Episode 11. Fairhaven.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning to round.
And our cold open occurs in Fairhaven.
It does.
It looks to me like it's post-Bronze Age.
Yeah.
Which is good.
This is... I think the same fake European town that they used in the World War II holodeck simulation, but repainted to look like Ireland. Is that?
I did want to keep my eyes peeled for fascists.
I mean, fighting fascists is a full-time job, man.
This restaurant will serve as our command post.
Got to keep your head on a swivel these days.
Yeah.
No Vichys or Nazis visible here. It's just,
Seamus.
Just Seamus, Maggie O'Halloran getting macked on by Harry Kim.
You remember that episode where Harry Kim wakes up in an alternate dimension and there's Cosmo the coffee man?
Oh, yeah.
I really got that vibe from Seamus. And I think unintentionally, this episode sets up a discomfort with things right off the bat, just given the stories that Voyager has told previously about places like this.
Right. We also saw an apartment that looked very similar to Harry Kim's San Francisco apartment in the previous episode. So it's like priming us to be thinking about these situations in that way.
Right. Seamus is a very talkative NPC about things going bad at home with his wife.
Yeah.
And Paris is just like furiously mashing the X button mentally to like speed past all of this stuff.
Yeah.
It's not working.
No, it's not working. Seamus played by the great Richard Reel, a fave that guy of mine.
He's got to be on Mount That Guy, right?
He really is, yeah. I feel like he and Brian Doyle Murray kind of get switched up in my mind sometimes. Like, I feel like they often play similar parts. They have similar...
Yeah.
They probably see each other in castings all the time, right?
There's probably the same amount of gravel in each other's throats, too. You can't possibly cast a movie or TV show with both of them. It's just too powerful.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Of a force of that guy's.
That's how you make a singularity.
Yeah, yeah. That guy's singularity must be prevented at all costs.
Tom kind of cock blocks Harry and says, oh, man, you got to come check out the pub, man. The pub is where it's at.
Yeah.
Leave Maggie O'Halloran alone.
I lasted 22 minutes.
It becomes clear that Tom is the programmer. He is the auteur of Fairhaven. And he has specifically programmed it not to be, you know, a fantastical place. There's no Flotter. There's no leprechauns. There's no Arachnia, the spider queen.
There's a sense of holodeck programmer vanity happening here with Tom Paris that is depicted throughout the episode, I think in a pretty useful way. Like, Paris made a great thing and he's sharing it with everyone, but everyone who participates in the thing is like, boy, I wish you did it like that. It's like he's getting the comments at him.
Right, right.
It really made me feel for Tom Paris here. Leave him alone.
Fairhaven is perfect, just the way it is.
You know, leave a 5-star review if you like it, and if you don't, you know, that's cool too.
He's one pipping around. His dad may or may not hate him. He's trying to fuck alien shuttlecrafts. Like,
yeah.
He's struggling.
His life is not going well. Just like slap him on the back and say, you did good on the Fairhaven program, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Be grateful for Fairhaven.
Am I making any sense here?
EMH shows up, has taken on an identity of a Graham of the cloth.
Did you see how he leaned his bike on the curb?
Very, very far over.
I feel like if you're behind the camera watching this and the direction is, all right, the doc rolls up on a bike and then leans it against the curb and you watch this happen, I would be like sticking my fist in my mouth and like biting down on it, because the way he leans the bike on the curb is like pedal down.
Yeah.
It's the perfect lean.
It's amazing.
He could do this take 10 times and not get the bike to do this. It was crazy. I didn't listen to any of the dialogue in this scene because I was staring at that bike waiting for it to fall over.
No, he did a great job. I mean, Robert Picardo's a pro.
He really is. He's ridden a bike before.
Yeah. He's got some work to do on a homily for Sunday Mass, which apparently is a part of this program, which seems like it really sucks. Like,
imagine like the draft of characters, because that had to have happened before this, right? You got to pick out who you're going to be in Fairhaven, and the doctor gets stuck with Priest. That sucks.
And he's like taking it out on all of them by making them listen to his sermons. Is that your conjecture?
Yeah.
That's the way God wants it. I don't know why, dude.
So after the theme, we're in Sullivan's Pub, where Paris is taking bets on an arm wrestling match between Harry and a real beardo.
Yeah. I love this, like, reverse goatee look that a certain kind of, like, brawler in a show set in Ireland has. He's got the, like, the chops that end at the beard, and then he shaved off the chin part of the beard.
Yeah. The thing most people only do, like, in a bathroom shaving environment to, like, audition the look, but then finally shave the whole thing off.
It's like, no.
This is dumb.
Too silly. I mean, I'll take a picture and, like, show my friends later so we can laugh at it, but can't walk out the house looking like this.
How about the drama of the Harry Kim arm wrestling match? It really looks like he's done for.
Yeah. He's whispering at Liam.
Yeah.
Your left is stronger.
A lot of people get kind of browbeat into putting money on Harry Kim, so it's lucky that he wins.
Yeah.
You think the safeties are on in the arm wrestling match?
That's a piece of this that's really interesting, is like, was Paris a good bro to Harry Kim in programming the arm wrestler guy? Like, you're going to make it so that Harry Kim wins, but make it exciting and interesting and not like he would just dominate in an unrealistic way.
This would have head off the whole Moriarty thing at the pass if they'd said, make a holodeck villain that can't beat Data, but can really make Data worry that he might get beat.
You would be a great programmer.
The captain walks in uniform. She hasn't cosplayed her way into this program, and she meets the publican, a real hunk.
Yeah. Look at this guy. He's just there wiping off the bar, doing bartender stuff.
Polishing the beer tap, suggestively.
You have outdone yourself this time. Everything is authentic, except for one tiny detail.
Oh? Criticizing the backwards harp?
Yeah. Yeah, harp is backwards.
This is a very subtle bit of trivia that really establishes Janeway's bona fides.
Yeah.
W/R/T. Being Irish, you know?
Yeah. What's the deal with it? Is it like hanging the American flag upside down?
Yeah.
Because you don't like who got elected president?
This bar needs rescue. A correctly facing harp lets other Irish people know that you know which direction the harp should face.
A reversed Irish harp means you're considering moving to Canada because you do not consider the political situation to be heading in your direction.
People don't want to be thinking about politics in an Irish bar.
They just want to drink themselves to oblivion on harp lager and get a stout. You're going to bum somebody out.
Black and tans are too slow. Too slow to make them. You're backing up the line here.
Pour it out. Start again.
I mean, you can feel at this moment in the episode that this guy is going to be important, but he's not interesting right now. Not at all.
Right.
So uninteresting is the scene that Janeway's like, all right, back to work.
Yeah, I hear Harry whispering to an arm wrestler over there. Go check that out.
Yeah.
Just hammer chrome, just like that. That's really strong.
And the story is there's a neutronic wavefront nearby, and it merits some preparation, because in the Ass Lab, Seven tells Paris, Janeway, and Chakotay about this wave. They've got 15 hours before it hits.
Yeah.
And it's not like they can just turn the ship into the wave like a Sulu in the big chair.
Right.
And warping away is out of the question also.
I really wondered why the captain would personally come down to the holodeck to tell people about this. Like, it sounds like an emergency, but then you're like, oh, they have 15 hours. Like, I mean, it's like, it's not going to be great, but they could do things to get ready.
You don't often hear this kind of command, like, let's just stay put and ride it out.
Yeah. Well, they can't do anything else because it's already affecting them. They're not able to jump to warp. Impulse won't get them away from it in time. So it's batten down the hatches and ride out the storm. And they're going to be buffeted by particles. So radiation inoculations for everyone.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like they're stressed about the radiation.
No. I mean, medicine has techniques to defend people against something like this, except for the precious few who choose to eat horse tranquilizer and die on the mission. We don't get that C story.
Our course is locked in.
Do it. Listen to me very carefully, because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
Neelix finds Janeway in his restaurant way after hours. He's like, you can't be in here right now. Like, I'll get shut down by the health department.
I don't like this look for Janeway. I don't like a person keeping a service industry person in their job after closing.
Yeah.
Fuck out of here, Janeway.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
What do you make of this story she tells about being from a part of Earth that evidently doesn't have weather generators on it? She's like,
yeah.
I grew up with very terrifying storms in Indiana.
Maybe they like let them happen, but they kind of like dial back on how lethal they are with the weather generators just for like kind of ambience.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
You know?
I always enjoyed a good ion storm.
Give me clear skies any day.
You want some weather,
mm-hmm.
just not annoying weather.
Or maybe she grew up in a time where Monty Markham was like the governor of Indiana and was just kind of letting the weather generators sit idle to, you know, let the Federation citizenry know how soft they'd become.
A very condescending Monty Markham. For sure. Neelix is concerned about what the crew's going to be doing while they've dropped anchor and has proposed maybe something that I thought was what just naturally would happen with a holodeck program, but instead is kind of a unique property to the thing, an open door policy to the Fairhaven program on the holodeck, where you can just walk in and walk out anytime, 24/7. And
yeah.
Janeway's like, oh, you mean like the mess hall? And then they cut back to Neelix and he's like, got a pencil in his hand. No, not like the mess hall, Captain.
Yeah, nobody's talking about rebooting Talaxi and Tiki Bar. Nobody's talking about Sandrines.
Unclear whether or not anyone at Fairhaven knows how to give a Talaxian foot rub.
No, yeah. I mean, Neelix is going to be modifying some of the characters himself later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So Janeway goes back into the Fairhaven program and finds Sullivan, the owner of the town pub, and he's also doing some kind of after-hours stuff. But he's got a tea service out waiting and offers her a cuppa, and they sit and talk.
She's like, what do you have in the taps back there? And he's like, four kinds of vegetable broth. Like, so much is made of Janeway reprogramming this character to, like, her exact specifications. I feel like right off the production line, this guy comes pretty close to satisfying her needs.
Right, yeah. He starts calling her Katie O'Claire because her people are from County Clare. I guess that's just a role that she's going to gleefully inhabit. They play a pub game, which is ring toss.
Doesn't it start to feel a little minuet-ish when a holodeck character really wants you to stay and play with them?
Really does.
I got that vibe from this guy because she's like, after she chugs her tea and vegetable broth, she's like, all right, gotta go to bed. And he's like, no.
Wait.
That's more like Star Trek training there. You're thinking something is up here. He might be minuetting.
Wait, please don't go. You can't, not yet.
There's a lot about this character that feels minuetish for sure.
How much of it has to do with his face also?
Yeah. Did you watch Game of Thrones? Were you a Game of Thronesman?
I was not. No, yeah. I couldn't tolerate the nudity.
Yeah, neither could I.
Just dragons flying around, hanging dong in the air.
Yeah. The other dragons, giant dragon boobs hanging in the air.
I know. What is up with those horny dragons?
This guy is apparently a big character on Game of Thrones.
Hmm. He's got a face for thrones.
He really does. Yeah, he's got those deep facial scars.
Yeah.
He's really good at arm wrestling. He doesn't have to whisper.
Careful.
This seems like one of those moves in middle school where, like, you need an excuse to touch a person you have a crush on. And so you're like, hey, let's do trust falls or something. Like, and they're like face to face here doing the arm wrestling thing.
Yeah. Chris Hansen walks out the second the arm wrestling match is over.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He's really made her a ring on his ring toss pole, though.
Mm.
She's putty in his hand until he drops the W bomb.
Wow.
He's got a wife.
Yeah. I mean, what he can't possibly know is that Janeway is not used to losing both arm wrestling or a guy she's interested in to a wife. She's ready to blow up the ship at this point.
Yeah.
I think.
Katie, you could get hurt.
I'm stronger than I look.
The wife comes in. She's got Janeway season one hair, and she's like, God damn it! My hair's too short to do that style now.
Frances, the wife, seems pretty cool about this, given the ring game playing and the arm wrestling they admit to doing.
Yeah. By the fact that Chris Hansen is still sitting over at the bar, just like observing.
You see Chris Hansen as the third to a hang with your special person and another person. That's not a good look, right?
Yeah, you're like, Chris, who are you? Which of them are you here for?
No one has ever been this cool as Frances is about this scene.
Yeah.
But Janeway sees this as an opportunity to leave.
Yeah.
And she does.
She heads to Six Bay where the EMH is doling out the radiation jabs. Janeway gets hers. Doesn't even wince when the hypo goes in.
Everyone there is really psyched about the Fairhaven program. There's a lot of discussion about like the possibility of an expansion pack. And I was thinking, if you're Tom Paris, why wouldn't you do microtransactions so he can get some replicator credits, you know? He's a guy that from time to time has run out.
Ooh, now you're thinking of like an executive at Electronic Arts, Adam.
You know it.
Woo! Yeah. Topical video game joke.
Over on the bridge, the entrance that Janeway makes here is incredible. Because she has a real Adam shows up for a lobby call sense of timing. Like, the wave is going to be on the ship in less than a minute, and Janeway has decided to arrive on the bridge less than a minute before the wave hits.
Right. The cab is about to leave because it can't, like, legally idle for more than 10 minutes or whatever.
She would have missed this thing if there was a backup at the turbo lift, right?
She would have.
Do you think the captain has express, like, the fireman key for the turbo lift? Like, when she's in it, it goes where she wants to go first.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I was little, my dad had a friend who was like in a assisted living facility that he would go visit a bunch. And so I would like go with my dad a lot. And one of my great joys was he would always like give me a dollar and let me go down to the lobby to get something out of the vending machine while we were there. And an old man on the elevator showed me the trick of, if you hold the button down for the floor you're going to, it will skip the other floors on this elevator because there's so many medical emergencies in an assisted living facility like this. I like abused the shit out of this. And then like years later realized like that was like actually really uncool, because if EMTs need to get a person that's like coding out of the building and like a 10-year-old is like using this feature to speed up his access to a baby Ruth or whatever. Like, I could have caused somebody's death.
That is classic Benjamin R. Harrison guilt. Right there. That's guilt myth-making by you. You got to let it go.
I prefer lying awake in bed at night worrying about that personally.
My mind went all sorts of places thinking about what possible things could be inside a vending machine at an assisted living facility. And my mind directly went to like a vending machine full of lifesavers.
Yeah.
Like hard candy.
Fig Newtons and lifesavers.
Do it.
So they get a pretty heavy-duty banger with the leading edge of this wave. But once it passes, it's calm.
Mm-hmm.
And they hope that the leading edge is going to be the worst of it. But then we just cut forward 10 hours in time. And we've got three more days of this storm that the Voyager is going to have to weather. But now it's just kind of downtime on the ship while they ride it out.
Janeway's log tells us that Fairhaven has gotten 5-star reviews. It's not just the crew that loves it. She loves it too. And she's really hit it off with Michael, the bartender, even though Paris did not consult with her on the design of this man.
Yeah. To that end, she goes into this kind of holodeck editorial room where it's got like a small holo grid and a bunch of computers. And she loads up the Michael Sullivan program and starts making some adjustments, adding a couple of inches here, tightening some things up there.
Education, personality, hog size, no attachments to a wife or a family.
Yeah. At one point, she does say, delete the wife, and we cut to the inside of Holodeck 2, where Chakotay falls right on his boner onto a rough-hewn floor.
Oh, that poor guy.
So sad.
Ben, I sadly don't play enough hours of video games, but I feel like if you were going to like look at the pie graph of where I spend my time playing video games, the character construction part of those games is like 80% of the time spent. And then 20% is like the playing of the game before I eventually stop.
Yeah, I'm kind of the opposite, I would say.
Yeah.
I just want to get through that part.
Over in the mess hall, Tuvok is looking sick. Space sick.
Yeah, he's really suffering.
And this seems to be, for anyone watching, something related to the wave there inside. And Seven suggests that he goes and takes care of himself, but he won't.
He says he's having gastrointestinal stress. Go, like, at least get out of a public place, Tuvok. If you're such a shame-oriented person, like, you can never talk about your...
Better look strong and constitutioned around the crew. It's what they expect.
Yeah.
No one expects a farting Tuvok.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, save yourself a little bit of shame. Like, you don't want to go through the anal equivalent of Ponfar in front of everyone, right?
Does that involve fingers?
It's the 7-year shit.
It's 9:39 in the morning, and you were able to conjure something really great there. You're a total pro, Ben.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been up all night.
You could do this anytime.
I've been up all night thinking about these things.
I love the scene where Paris and Kim are working on alts for the holodeck program.
Yeah.
And they pitch some ideas.
What if it was gloomier?
Like, totally nauseating ideas. Like, what if you had more ashtrays filled with beer and vomit? Like, really on-the-nose descriptions of things that are sick-making.
Yeah, what if there was, like, a way that you could trip and fall in the game and your mouth would, like, hit a pile of cat food and it would, like, go inside your mouth?
Yeah. What if there were just more open sewers?
How bloody should the pudding be?
This is great. And Tuvok is gonna puke, and I wanted to watch this so bad.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a real sick puppy. I wanted to watch Tuvok puke.
He's gonna puke! He's gonna puke! He's gonna puke!
Do you think, like, if people puke green, do Vulcans puke red?
Oh, that's gnarly. I wouldn't like that.
No, it's bad. The how sick can we make Tuvok scene? A lot of fun. We cut back over to Fairhaven, where Janeway has put on a bodice, all the better for the rippin'. She's touring around looking for Mr. Sullivan, who is not at the pub. One of the mods she's made is that he's a more lettered character. So he's down by the train station reading a bit of literature.
Yeah, this is really conspicuous reading in public, isn't it?
Yeah. Hey, look at me. Look at what... There was a kid in my college class who would always have a How to Make Friends and Influence People book that he would read before class started. Uh-huh. Which was a real, like, what are you trying to telegraph?
Cool. You know, you could use a book cover on that.
Yeah. You could make that look like it's almost anything.
Janeway's missed the train, but Michael Sullivan is ready to run a train on regular intervals. If only she would sit on that bench with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The chat, the banter, even more zesty than it was before. And now he's putting her on to poetry and literature.
Yeah.
He's like just starting to really put the moves on thick when Chakotay shows up. And, oh man, this was a tough scene.
I love how Michael Sullivan and Chakotay observe each other in that, like, should I be threatened by you?
Yeah.
Like, they both have that feeling. It's great.
It's such an alpha move to invite your primary romantic competition on the date you're about to go on.
Amazing. I love how Michael Sullivan tin mans the word tattoo in this scene also.
That's a fine tattoo. Are you off a ship?
You could say that.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, like complimenting your, you know, like, oh man, you got real rock hard abs on you, huh?
Feel those calluses.
Yeah.
Those are the calluses of hands that make bathtubs, huh?
Oh, you're really strong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Change the angle of your elbow. Yeah, that's it.
Make sure you don't press down.
Yeah, you just got to work on the placement of your hips and you're going to be really good at this.
So Chakotay fucks off to the Ox and the Lamb, leaving Janeway and Michael Sullivan alone again.
You two have fun.
And we cut to later on the bridge. They're back at work, Chakotay and Janeway are. Janeway's getting briefed on how rough things are and how they're going to get over the next few days. And Janeway's been reading on the bridge during her shifts. I don't think that's cool.
It's very funny, like, Chakotay picks up this poetry book, and he has the energy of, like, I found your whack-off material, you know? He's very encouraging of it. He's not trying to stop her from having her fun.
Chakotay picks up Janeway's book and, like, reads the title, and he's like, who's Chuck Tingle?
Catching up on a little reading.
It's fun because, like, Chakotay won't say it, but he's got this all figured out.
Yeah.
Like, this is a fun bit of light ball kicking at the captain here.
I mean, we've all enjoyed a bit of bangers and mash, you know?
I love that at the end of this conversation, Chakotay seems comfortable with admitting to Janeway and everyone else within earshot on the bridge that he has fucked a hollow person or hollow people. And he is really okay with that.
It's perfectly normal, perfectly healthy. He's into it, you know?
Yeah. You want this kind of friend.
I feel like he's so into it that he'd be into, like, doing it with her, you know?
In the interest of Irish culture.
Exactly.
Exactly. As a team-building exercise.
I've got to get that
Latinum. Put your Latinum where your mouth is.
But I've got to get that
Latinum.
I think we've just drunk gold.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful, Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have and their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
There are three things to remember about being a Starship captain. Keep your shirt tucked in. Go down with the ship and do it.
So we cut to the lower decks of the Titanic, where the steerage people are doing jigs.
Yeah.
Sullivan's Pub is like the place to hang on a Saturday night, right?
It is off the hook. Sullivan's has everything. Irish jigs, vegetable broth on tap. No leprechauns.
No Farrakhan's leprechauns that look like Farrah Fawcett.
It's the only Irish pub that that can needle drop Pony and
yeah,
that still feel like the vibes are right.
What do you think makes Janeway so free in this scene to assume her own privacy? Because she seems to be the only crew person in Sullivan's for this rager, right?
Yeah. That surprised me too. I mean, they do talk about like they're using both holodecks for this. So maybe like Captain's holodeck is the one she went to.
Yeah. I like that idea.
I mean, there is one other member of the crew in here, because when she asked the computer to remove all of the non-Sullivan characters, it cuts to out in the alley where Chakotay falls dick first into the cobblestones.
Ouch.
And then he turns to the camera and he goes, remember how I was talking about how I sometimes fuck holodeck characters?
Yeah, a rare breaking of the fourth wall on this show.
I never let that stand in my way.
Yeah, it's fun.
It really helps you understand Chakotay's angst.
Yeah. They've waited long enough, Adam. Katie O'Claire and Michael Sullivan.
Yeah.
Time to start smooching.
We cut around the different areas of the bar to metaphorically depict what's happening here. And there's like, over on the tap of vegetable broth, there's like a slow leak that turns into like kind of a deluge. And then like one of the ring pegs on the ring toss game gets long, like a Pinocchio nose.
It's extra big. And
yeah.
Then just a stack of rings falls on it.
Yeah, a stack of saggy rings below that giant shaft.
A banger falls into a plate of mash. With a lot of gravy.
Just a bowl of mashed potatoes that have been absolutely pulverized. Way over mashed.
Mm-hmm.
It's hot. It's hot and heavy.
Yeah.
Good job by Michael Sullivan asking to kiss her and then kissing her and then reaffirming her consent afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to believe part of the reason we cut away is because this consent request is constant.
Yeah, I mean, the next question he asks her, you know, is a little too hot for TV, I think.
Might I overwhip your mashed potatoes?
Presumably, she sort of got what she came for based on what happens in the next scene, because we're in her quarters and it's very rueful. It's very contemplative. It's just this silent little moment where she takes her stack of, you know, artificially distressed Irish literature and puts it in the matter recycler and recycles it.
I'm trying to decide whether or not to go for a joke here. But it's the morning. Like, I'm just all up in my own head about it.
Well, maybe we could workshop it. What's the joke?
It is to the tune of the Cranberry Zombie. What's in your head? In your head? Michael's dick. Michael's dick. Michael's hard dick.
That's quite a grip you have.
I think that was worth going back for.
All right. Felt good.
Neelix comes in and finds Janeway having her sad.
I love that this might be Neelix putting the hand on the other foot here after the staying after hours at the mess hall that Janeway did. Mm-hmm. Like, very late at night, Neelix is like, oh, you're still up.
Oh.
And this is your private time?
Oh.
Interesting. Hmm.
Hey, if you aren't sad enough already, the doctor's thinking about doing a rendition of Danny Boy down at the pub.
Yeah, that is not the attraction that he thinks it is, is it?
She declines to be cheered up and declines to go to the rings tournament. But we cut to the rings tournament where Seven is absolutely stomping a mud hole in Seamus's ass.
Poor Seamus.
Yeah.
He's really eating shit here.
Yeah. He's not doing well. Her hand-eye coordination, far beyond his.
Yeah.
She's going to be kissing a lot of blonde girls with black skirts to feel better about this.
The thing about this scene is that it pays off up the long ladder because the Borgs assimilated that culture. And that's how Seven's so good at this game.
We added the distinctiveness of the ring toss game to our own.
For a while, it was very addictive on Borg's cubes.
Yeah. Like,
everyone played it.
Turned out Michael O'Sullivan, also a teetotaler. He's very much the Sam of the Sullivan's Cheers bar.
He is, isn't he? Good call.
He is over at the bum out table. And for some reason, this is a side quest that Tom and the EMH decide to play in this game, cheering up the sad bartender.
Yeah.
So they go over and hit triangle to see what's up. And he starts telling them about how, I had this like magical night with Katie O'Claire and she ghosted me, man.
Yeah.
I don't know, even know where she is. I haven't seen her around at all.
I think it's natural for Paris to be like insufficiently interested in a non-player character story here. But what's fun is the consequence of this.
Yeah.
Because when he's not enough of a bro to Michael, Michael goes in for some fisticuffs.
You don't think I'm good enough for him? No, I didn't say that.
And it lights off a massive bar fight.
Yeah, like an Old West style barroom brawl breaks out. And safeties are off. Like, this sends a bunch of people to Six Bay with actual injuries.
Did the safeties cover injury or just death?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, how could the computer be sure what's going to kill you?
I don't know. That's a great question.
Could you get like a holodeck injury that leads to accidental death? And then it's like you got to sue the manufacturer of the holodeck for wrongful whatever?
Like if an NPC breaks a bar stool over your back, but when you fall, you hit your head on the corner of the bar.
Right. Whose fault?
Whose fault is
that? Who bears the liability of that?
Yeah. Hard to know.
I know Starfleet's not picking up the tab.
Certainly not.
They're all in Six Bay getting, you know, lights waved over them. And the captain comes down. She's like, what gives? Like, I'm bored as fuck. I'm not doing holodeck anymore. And the ship is still stuck in the mud. So, like, what's going on down here?
It's fun how everyone in Six Bay knows the reason. Like, when everyone knows a thing that the captain doesn't,
yeah,
that's a fun bit of tension, right?
Why don't we take a little walk?
And the tension also being that it's like a little bit suspicious that she is like this curious about what's going on in the holodeck, despite,
right,
you know, having chosen to stop going.
I mean, the last time Kim and Paris showed up injured like this, there was a mechanical butt slapping machine involved on some space station, you know?
Maravilloso.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
The EMH walks with Janeway down the hall and sort of gets into what his theory is about why she's so deep in her fifis. And this is kind of like uncommonly emotionally intelligent for the EMH. He is noticing that she had this kind of romantic dalliance and that it is a pretty unusual thing for her to permit herself a comfort like this. And he is concerned that she is too isolated and not taking care of the person Janeway, because she's being Captain Janeway too much.
He's observed that she has not walked with a limp like this for a long time. And you can't just go cold turkey off of playing the rings,
right,
with Michael Sullivan, you know?
Yeah. In prying, as he says he doesn't want to do, he learns from her that she kind of got freaked because of how appealing it got. You know, she had this magical, you know, lakeside hang. They fucked beside a waterfall.
Uh-huh.
She's pregnant with a hollow baby.
Yeah.
You know, a lot is changing for her.
It was a memorable 3 days.
I made him eat pineapples in a picnic by that waterfall. He ate 14 pineapples that day.
We learned in the re-encounter at Farpoint that you have to eat pineapple for a long time before that takes effect.
Yeah. But I made it so that it took effect immediately.
I went down to that laboratory and said, computer, alter the character of Michael Sullivan so that he's been having a serving of pineapple every day for the last 30 days.
I don't see the problem.
Don't you?
This moment, like, the assumption is that Janeway's shame would come from fucking a hollow character. But something else creeps into this admission, right? Like, she's got real feelings for a hollow character, and she fucked him.
Yeah.
But also, like, third on this list is that she just couldn't stop tinkering with his perfection.
Right. She met a man that was a little bit broken and decided to make a project of him, but we had the awesome power of being able to actually move the sliders in the settings.
You see, Doctor, I've lived the dream. I've flown too close to the sun. A sun made of pineapple ropes.
Yeah. The working title of this script was The Icarus Factor.
Yeah. Yeah. The doctor defends her decision making like this. Like, you gotta fuck somebody. And it sure as hell can't be anyone from the crew.
Right.
And we cut over to Chakotay, who is on Fairhaven in that very same picnic plot where Janeway and Michael were.
He's doing like Native American tracker stuff, and there's like a wet spot on the ground, and he smells it and like takes a little taste of it on the tip of his tongue and goes, pineapple. And then he snaps a pencil.
The doctor's done the math too. Like, there aren't enough aliens with compatible genitals around for them to go port to port to, just to satisfy Janeway's needs. And where does that leave her?
Yeah.
Because Janeway's feelings are real.
Yeah.
Even if the dude isn't.
There's coffee in that hologram, if that's possible.
So there is a compelling case for continuing to get that bodice shredded.
I really like the subtext of this being the doctor's case that he's making too.
Yeah.
Because woven throughout his entire argument is like, you know, Hollow people are pretty cool and they have a lot of advantages to being around. And, you know, they kind of deserve personhood or whatever. Like, fucking a Hollow isn't less than.
In many ways, it's better than. And Hollows should have really rich and interesting sex lives also.
Yeah. At the end of the conversation, Janeway hops on a turbo lift, and it really makes you wonder where she was headed. But we cut over to the bridge, and that's where she's at. She's giving orders for the ship to keep riding out the bangers.
Yeah, this is the trailing edge sequence. This is the last of the wave before the storm abates. And, you know, the bangers are hitting them, and it's like suddenly this storm that hasn't really posed that much of a problem for the ship is going to tear them apart if they don't make some modifications to the deflector array. And it's one of those scenes where it's like, okay, I guess there were some stakes in this episode aside from like Janeway's personal life stuff.
Easy to forget.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like this episode does sort of forget a lot of things. Like the Tuvok is allergic to the neutronic radiation storyline doesn't seem to go anywhere at all.
I mean, that moment really clangs on the bridge, too. Like, the idea that this is a life-threatening moment and we need all the power from everywhere, and there's that big, thick highlight and underline of, like, even Fairhaven? Please say it's not so. Yeah. In order to survive this moment, we need to shut down a holodeck program.
And this is an easy decision for Janeway to make.
Do it.
It seems like she's sort of already made the decision. Like, she put her books in the matter reclamation system.
I think the show is trying to say something that it's really not able to, which is, like, the disposable quality of a holodeck and its program. Janeway could go into the holodeck presumably at any time and program anyone to be any type of person that she needs in that moment. The idea that Michael Sullivan is unique is sort of, like, again, portrayed as a sort of minuet figure in a way that I don't think is earned, but it's also unspoken.
Right.
So it makes you connote a value for him that maybe he doesn't have. Is the value just in the property of being Janeway's first nut in 6 years?
I mean, we know that not to be true because she had Leonardo da Vinci programmed up
right
before.
Yeah.
A way to focus the mind.
Anyway, they make the ultimate sacrifice.
They mess up Fairhaven, and Tom and Harry are in there the next morning, I guess, like assessing the damage.
Yeah.
And Fairhaven got real fucked up. They're talking about like, oh, we could just like restart it or rebuild the program. And Tom is like, nah, it won't be the same. All the little details and nuances won't be there.
It's interesting to see how the NPCs interact with their environment. Like, Seamus thinks that all the crackling and static around the program is a storm, but that's only because he's an idiot.
Yeah. You know, Maggie O'Halloran isn't as receptive to Harry's advances. It's all really sad.
We cut over to Chakotay, and he's in the middle of fucking a non-player character's crackly hole. Cracklin' hole, get on board. Chakotay's gonna fuck you. I don't have an ending to that song.
I don't even know what song you're parodying.
Neil Diamond's Cracklin' Rosie. Maybe I'll go back and pick that up later. That's fun.
Okay.
Sounds great.
Paris comes to the ready room and asks the captain if there's any particular part of the program she'd like him to save, because they can only save a little bit.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, sign them all.
She goes down to that holo lab and starts the Michael O'Sullivan character, and he remains like mad at her. Like, she has not seen him since the lakeside hang.
It's weird how she knows this, because the part that Janeway has decided to save is like below the neck and above the knee. It's just a floating torso.
Activate him.
And it's thrusting mechanically.
With a raging charger.
It's Sato.
I can tell you're mad at me.
He's really salty about this. And he was like, he was thinking marriage. He's like talking about settling down. And he's lucky she doesn't laugh in his face. Although I guess he doesn't have a face. He just has the torso part.
Star Trek does a great job of like ending the drama of falling for a holodeck character before the end of the episode. But like, what if they decided to continue on through? Like, what if Janeway did marry a holo program?
I mean, she'd become a much fiercer advocate for holo rights than she ever has with the Doctor, I presume.
She'd probably be less liable to blow up the ship anytime she doesn't get her way.
That would not be bad.
I could blow up my husband at any time.
So this does sort of seem like she's here to say goodbye, but then instead she saves the character and locks herself out of tinkering with the controls of the character.
I like this. Not changing the difficulty level on the game you're playing mid-game.
Yeah. Nice ending. But did you like this episode?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullying, I don't like threats, and I don't like you. Understood.
Weird episode. Like, period Star Trek is such a specific kind of Star Trek, you know?
Yeah.
And so often it can ring as cheesy, and boy, I mean, Star Trek has a difficult past with depictions of the Irish.
Sure.
But they don't manage to fumble the ring here on this one. It's a pleasant depiction of a place and its people, even if it's fanciful or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't quite rise to the level of seeming discomforting.
Yeah. I like getting more into Janeway's inner life and her struggle and her solitude as captain. So often, we've experienced Janeway as like a frustrated leader who sacrifices, like just the main sacrificial figure of the crew.
Right.
Willing to work all hours, willing to give away her opportunities for fun at every turn. And it is sad that, you know, in a rare time where she chooses fun for herself, it goes so poorly. But it was interesting to see her grapple with those matters. And it's hard having Tom Mervins and all those dogs so far away. What's a captain to do?
Yeah.
Really ask some interesting questions without really completely answering them. What about you, Ben?
I think that I feel pretty similarly. Like, I think that this episode is really strong in terms of being a character study of what is painful about being Captain Janeway and really honoring what a struggle it must have been the last 5.5 years of her life to have all of this responsibility and so few outlets for just like basic human needs in her life. And the challenges of that seem like something that they've maybe like not spent enough time on throughout the series.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I'd say like the episode overall felt a little like silly and claptrap. Like I think that they did do a good job of getting to some of those deep emotional truths for the Janeway character. And I think that Kate Mulgrew is so good at, you know, making that stuff feel super real and super lived in. But yeah, like it's also just like silly and dumb the rest of the time.
Yeah, that's so fair.
Very mixed feelings about this, but I never have mixed feelings about the Priority One inbox, Adam.
No, never silly are the P1s.
Never.
Let's get in there and see what's waiting for us.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a promotional nature. The message goes like this. Do you need a buggy board game web app for your podcast? Would you like that built by an FOD who named his company after a weird AI movie? How about an FOD who is spending $200 on a legitimate business expense, and not just as a way to support his favorite podcast? I don't know how many of us there are out there, but you can put me on your short list. The call to action here is to visit uhf62.co.uk for more information on what Craig Anderson is promoting here.
Craig Anderson, the programmer of the game of buttholes, The Will of the Caretaker, and an FOG that we've met over video.
That's right.
After one of our live shows that we did as a stream. A great dude and really responsive and easy to work with from our perspective. So if you're a paying customer, I bet he's even better.
Yeah. We love our buggy board game.
Yeah.
Craig Anderson.
Yeah. Our board game rules.
Baby Billy's buggy board game.
You bet your ass. I think we just witnessed a mission from God.
Is that what that was?
Yeah. And he did not program anything in to make it so that Adam rolls ones all the time.
Not at all. I don't suspect a thing, Craig. Thanks a lot for making the show so fun, and definitely visit uhf62.co.uk.
Yeah. I love the idea that friends of DeSoto are like getting to work together and collaborating on cool projects now.
Agreed.
Well, Adam, our next Priority One message is from Captain Benjamin Sisko.
Ow!
And it is to personal log stardate 51721.3. And it goes like this. At 0800 hours, the Romulan Empire formally declared war against the Dominion. They have already struck 15 bases along the Cardassian border. So this is a huge victory for the good guys. This may even be a turning point in the entire war. So I lied. I cheated. I bribed men to cover the crimes of other men. I am an accessory to murder.
Eat your heart out, Avery Brooks.
Yeah. I really showed him how to read those lines.
Ben, our second Priority One message is a continuation of this log, and it goes like this. But the most damning thing of all, I think I can live with it. And if I had to do it all over again, I would. Garrick was right about one thing. A guilty conscience is a small price to pay for the safety of the Alpha Quadrant. So I will learn to live with it. Because I can live with it. I can live with it. Computer, erase that entire Priority One message.
too late. It's already recorded on tape.
Yeah, done and done.
Wow.
Nice memory of an incredible moment.
Yeah.
On Deep Space Nine.
That really, like, I mean, that's like as good as the Shaw monologue in Jaws, right?
It is. Yeah. Massive.
Yeah. Super good.
What is Janeway's moment like that? Has that happened yet?
Man, I feel like Janeway's had so many great moments.
Yeah.
How could I pick just one?
Have we already watched, do you think, the greatest episode of Star Trek Voyager? I'm asking big questions we don't have answers to at 10:15 in the morning.
Yeah, I can't remember anything. I can't even remember what this episode was about, Adam.
All right, well,
I can remember that the website people go to get Priority One messages is MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
That's right.
Is that anything?
That is a thing. That's a thing we need to say at the end of the P1s, because it is a simple and direct way to support The Greatest Generation and Greatest Trek, and we really appreciate it.
We do.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda.
I did. I'm going to give it to Janeway this episode for the casual wander into Six Bay that she does after the bar fight. Like, clearly wanting the tea on what Selvin is up to.
Yeah.
You know, not doing a great job of hiding what she's actually there for. It made me laugh. I thought it was a funny scene.
Yeah, I like that there's a scene before this where she's really considering whether or not to go in, you know?
Yeah.
There's an inner life here. Like, we see a bit of her inner life this episode, but there is so much more inner life happening off screen.
Right. How about you? Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
I think it could be no one besides Janeway for the choices she makes this episode.
Yeah.
Little bit chaotic. Like, chaotic with intent, you know?
Yeah. More like KTO chaos.
I mean, who wouldn't want to make a hollow person that just shoots pineapple ropes anytime you want them?
Sounds great.
That's what she says.
He's like an always functional soft serve machine. Dropping Dole Whip wherever he goes.
Little chunk of the Disney parks right here aboard the starship that we live on.
Yeah, delicious.
Wow. Well, let me tell you about the next episode while you head to gach.biz/game, Adam. Next episode is episode 12 of season 6, Blink of an Eye. Voyager becomes the unwitting focus of a planet's entire civilization.
Oh, really?
They really do.
That seems to be like a pre-warp civilization, you think? Is that the unspoken part? Kind of seems like a simple-minded kind of way to be if you're going to center Voyager in your worldview.
But can you call a planet that doesn't even have warp drive civilized, really?
No, you really can't.
Yeah.
Not having warp drive is so uncivilized.
Fuck that shit.
Ben, our runabout has warp drive. Currently rests on square 61 of the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Caretaker.
Programmed by Craig Anderson.
Yeah. One square ahead is a space butthole. Three squares ahead, Starship Mine, where we build a spaceship model while recording. What would be certainly a bad episode of our podcast.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
It can't be any worse than one that we have to record at 9 a.m. on a Saturday.
I'm going to roll the die. Ben, you wouldn't believe it, but I rolled a 2.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Whoa.
And instead of being on square 63, we are 6 squares ahead on square 67.
Uh-oh. Greg.
We're riding the bug.
Greg, what happened here?
The bug has taken us to square 67, even though I rolled a 2. My bets should be voided here, but instead it will be a regular old episode for us.
Yeah. Just to be clear, we have not paid Craig Anderson a dime, and,
no.
And he has refused all offers of payment here, so this isn't something that he did for an actual client.
No, his work is good. We know that. And I think maybe the game is kind of crumbling as we get to the end of Star Trek Voyager, right? Like, maybe... I say we ride this out. Like, whatever the game wants us to do, we'll just do it.
I like the chaos.
Yeah. Yeah.
The game is in charge now. Well, Adam, we got a lot of people to thank. Let's thank Wendy Pretty, our producer. Keeps the lights on around here, keeps the show running, keeps episodes coming out on time. Really wouldn't be possible without Wendy.
Hope FODs get to meet Wendy at Star Trek Las Vegas this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Is she coming?
At this point, she has not confirmed. I'm just going to leave that in to be edited out if it's not true.
Hey, Wendy, if you don't want to, if it doesn't seem fun, you don't have to.
Absolutely. Like, company policy is if it doesn't seem fun, don't do it.
Yeah.
That rule doesn't apply to the show itself.
Yeah, that's why our company is not in great shape financially.
Yeah. Got to thank all the FODs for making the show possible and a trip to Star Trek Las Vegas possible for coverage. You can support the show financially at MaximumFun.org/join. You can also support the show by getting a fun swimsuit for Star Trek Las Vegas over at podshop.biz.
Get some trunks. Wear them to the Pranica Cabanica.
Absolutely. We're going out on tour later in the year. Find all our tour stops at greatestgentour.com. Come and see us.
Come and see us. We are looking at a lot of shows that are selling quickly, so, you know, just be careful.
It's always a surprise to see how fast these shows sell. Really grateful and delighted at how much appetite there is for what we do out there.
Thanks to Bill Tilly, the Card Daddy, running the Greatest Trek social media accounts, overseeing them.
Yeah.
And our thanks to Adam Ragusea, who made our original theme music, our good buddy. Over there at the Adam Ragusea podcast and the Adam Ragusea show on YouTube.
That's right.
With that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode, Star Trek Voyager, an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager, where like an entire planet makes like a quasi-religion out of listening to our podcast. and we're like kind of weirded out by it and like not that into it.
I'm pretty sure this isn't a cult, right? Our show?
Hey, don't say the quiet part out loud, Adam.
Make it so. Make it so. It's not a cult.
Everybody gives.
Make it so.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.